Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, practicing veterinarian, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We are two for two now. I am in week number two, where I have an episode that is inspired by a listener email. Again, keep these coming, because there I was last week, had a whole topic in mind that I wanted to discuss, and you know, I'm never short of material just because of what I do for a living. There's always something to talk about. But I felt that the topic that I covered last week that was raised by a listener email was really important, and it really trumped what I was going to talk about previously. Well, this week, the same has occurred. I had that same topic in mind, and lo and behold, I get this email, and I'm like, nope, this is way more important. I want to get ahead of this as quickly as possible, because I see what the subject of this article is heading down the road of, you know, a mini mass hysteria about a certain product based on the opinions of people that are tying negative side effects of it to the product that aren't necessarily based in science, and they're drawing conclusions that are not true, yet they're gaining traction on social media and things like that. So it reminds me of like the Trifexis kills dogs thing that happened many years ago, where that was actually a Facebook page that somebody made, and it was largely disproven. But of course, you know, it got out there, and it started with a question here or there to me. Hey, is there any truth to this? And then little by little, there was people that utterly refused to put their dog on it, and you know, it didn't get out of control, but certainly it was a conversation I did not want to be having in my exam room when I got, you know, 15 to 30 minutes with you and I'm having to debunk this stuff. So want to get ahead of this one as quickly as possible, so at least my loyal listeners can be fully informed about this topic. So without further ado, let's jump into the email. Not a very long one. Dear Dr. Roger, thank you so much for your last episode. I understand how badly inflation affected many industries and driving up costs post-COVID, and I just assumed that my vet bills took a bigger jump that seemed disproportionate to other areas of the economy and made the assumption that maybe inflation hit your industry worse than others. Thanks to your episode, I looked into it and learned that my vet's practice was sold to one of the big vet companies you talked about, NVA. Ready for this? 5 years ago, and I never had any clue! Exclamation point. By the way, the 5 years ago, and I never had any clue! Exclamation point statement there was in all caps, right? So we're very serious here. Anyway, I'm in the process of reading reviews and getting as much word of mouth recommendation to choose a new vet in my area that I confirm is not big vet. I will also be doing my diligence once I have a new vet to check year in and year out if they sell to big vet, because clearly, nobody's telling anybody. Anyway, that was not the main reason I emailed you. I read a Wall Street Journal article about the arthritis monoclonal antibody injection for dogs called Librela. You had recently podcasted about it. The article discussed side effects that people have been reporting that Zoetis, the company that makes the drug, states that they did not see statistically in trials and in current hindsight data, and that those side effects are unrelated. My 13-year-old arthritic border collie is on Librela and doing amazing on it, so I wanted to get your take on the article. Sometimes medications are rushed to market before some side effects have been seen in research. Thanks so much. I hope I make it on the air. I absolutely love your podcast. Respectfully, Lawrence from Naperville, Illinois. Sorry if you hear my loudmouth dog in the background, despite my studio door being closed. He's very loud, and he's heavily triggered by the Amazon guy who apparently just dropped off a package at my front door. So anyway, I apologize for Alvin and if he's interrupting the sound effects here. So let's get ahead of this. So first off, thank you for bringing up, you know, the fact that the podcast last week kind of enlightened you and had you look into you know, who your vet is, and who's really, you know, the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, right? And if you're from Naperville, Illinois, I don't know if you guys know, I've discussed it before, but I did my clinical 1 year clinical training, my fourth year at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. So I'm well versed in Naperville, Illinois, and I know a number of practices in that area. I know one vet who owned like 52 clinics in Illinois, you know, in the like that suburban Chicago area. 52 clinics, and he sold them all to NBA. So you were probably going to one of those. So very interesting. And in fact, one of my vet school roommates, I won't say his name, but he actually is medical director of one of those clinics. So guarantee you probably were going to one of these that were owned by one particular veterinarian. And there was a bunch of partners involved too, but I won't get too much into that. So yes, do your diligence. Back to that last episode, big vet is not the single driver of increasing veterinary costs. And if you want to look into that, certainly listen to the episode, because, you know, I don't want to just trash on big vet. There's a lot of factors that go into increasing vet bills. And so I'd encourage you to listen to that. But let's get into Librela. So I've heard about this article already. I've got almost a year under my belt of using the product. It is nothing short of magical for these arthritic dogs. And, you know, I'd hate to see a product that has done so much good be canceled because of some of these allegations. Now, nothing is without side effects, but when, you know, I read the article myself, it is very hard to draw conclusions, any conclusions, based on what the claims of the owners are. And so certainly you lose a pet or some side effect happens that, you know, seems to be necessarily a cause and effect from a certain treatment. You naturally want to find out and get to the bottom of what caused this, because you need the closure of that if there is a tragic loss of the pet involved. But you also want to get the facts and know, in case, you know, you have another pet in the home, that maybe this is something I should avoid. Now, as far as the statement, and I'm going to comment on Librela directly, of course, but the last statement you made there, I know sometimes medications are rushed to market before some side effects have been seen in research. That really is not a thing anymore. There was a time when it was a thing. And so I could think of a great one. Back in the day, there was a product called Dexatrim. This goes back to like my childhood in the 80s, and people would take Dexatrim as an appetite stimulant in order to lose weight. Well, you can't find Dexatrim anywhere for a very long time. I think it got discontinued sometime in the 90s. And what the research initially, FDA trials did not show, was that it caused certain pretty debilitating diseases in a certain percentage of people. Don't ask me what they were. I have no idea, but I remember it getting pulled off a market. And one of the reasons I remember getting it pulled off a market is because there is a medication called phenylpropanolamine. It's known under the brand name Proen, that spun off in the veterinary circles after Dexatrim went off market. And I'll tell you why. So there is a, you know, disease, I wouldn't call it a condition, called nocturia. So it's urinary incontinence in older females. We see it most commonly where they wet their beds, basically. They don't know what's happening, and so they've lost control of their internal urethral sphincter. And so when they don't have the mechanism of the external urethral sphincter, which is under conscious control, that we can control, that they can control, because it's skeletal muscle, when they sleep, they wet their beds. And so phenylpropanolamine treats that very effectively. It's one of the treatments for it. But anyway, back in the day, I was pretty much, I think I was just a kennel boy at the time. And I learned in working in this veterinary clinic in Nutley, New Jersey, when I was going to Montclair State University undergrad, I learned that the vet would just say, oh, just put your dog on Dexatrim, because the active ingredient was phenylpropanolamine. Well, I'm going to say that the side effects that were being seen in people are not there's no equivalent in dogs. And so again, nothing's without side effect, but you know, here the vets were at a loss because they're like, okay, well, this, there's this very effective treatment that, yes, it might hurt people, but it doesn't hurt dogs. And, you know, in short order, there was a veterinary pharmaceutical, again, I don't know which one. I was not looking into things much in my, you know, when I was 19 years old, but they made a product in the veterinary circles for dogs, and it's actually quite safe for dogs. But that's an example of things being rushed to market, and unbeknownst to those unfortunate people that experience those side effects, they were victims of that. And so the FDA has really tightened things up with regard to that. They've just gotten increasingly stringent with the FDA trials as far as reporting of data, as far as quality control of the studies, and really, really tight regulation of just full disclosure on everything. And if you wonder why the cost of pharmaceuticals on both the human and veterinary sides are so expensive, here's I'll tell you why. So there are when they've gotten through a certain phase of trials, where I think they're stage 1 through 5, they've gotten through the lab animal stage, and then they're on the clinical trials with actual laboratory animals that they have specifically for that purpose, and they get to, so don't ask me the stage of, you know, where they're getting to the point where they're putting it into veterinary practice. But what happens is they will offer a veterinarian the opportunity to have patients participate in the study. And the study is going to be voluntary on the part of the client who owns the patient. And we're in experimental stages still, but you can get this treatment for free. The pharmaceutical company pays all the bills. They pay the visits that are necessary. They cover the cost of the medication. They cover any laboratory monitoring that's required to monitor for side effects. Sometimes we're doing lab work once every 3 months. I have not participated in these studies just because I don't want to see my patients be guinea pigs, right? And when I say guinea pigs, it's a little bit extreme, because by the time we have reached this stage of trials, we have established a lot of safety, but you know, it has to be put in clinical practice and put out there in the real world before they can get that final FDA approval. And sometimes it's a couple of, like several years. Not a couple of years, but several years of this, because the FDA wants to make sure that we are not rushing this to market. And so the expense of this is astounding, and that's why things cost the way they do. It's just there's a lot of investment that has to go into all that. So I would counter, Lawrence, that yes, there has been truth in what you're saying in that statement, certainly in the past, but it's gotten a lot better. And it's not to say that, you know, there might be a very rare side effect here or there that may not have been observed in clinical trials, but that's going to be rare for those who slip through the cracks because of all the diligence that these companies are forced to do, especially with something as cutting edge as monoclonal antibody therapy. We're actually kind of influencing the immune system. So the article, let me pull it up right here. I'll tell you the name of it. It's very sensational. It's the Wall Street Journal, and it's What Killed Their Pets? Owners Blame Meds, But Vets Aren't Sure. Maker Zoetis says side effects are rare and its arthritis drugs are safe. So pretty sensational title there. Good job, Wall Street Journal. Of course, it's going to grab attention. As I scrolled further, I was only able to read the first paragraph because they make you subscribe before you can read the rest of it. The subscription is $12.50 a week. So, you know, a lot of pet owners are going to read that, What Killed Their Pets? And boy, you know, I'm a pet owner, probably gonna, you know, and I know my dog's on Librela. I'm going to probably subscribe, at least temporarily, so I can read that article. So even if you cancel it, you've paid the $12.50 for that 1 week just so you can read the one article. But I decided not to subscribe. So I don't particularly like the Wall Street Journal, not just because of this article. It's just not something I have any interest in reading. So it starts with this 12-year-old rescue dog named Daisy that was struggling with a stiff right rear hip. And when Librela became available, the owners decided to give it a try. 2 weeks after the first injection, Daisy became wobbly on both hips. Eventually, she became paralyzed and ultimately had to be put down because of it. And so, you know, there is a reasonable potential conclusion to see a cause and effect there. Okay, my dog had a stiff hip, got Librela, things got considerably worse, but you know, the correlation, it is very hard to make that connection, and I'm going to explain why. So there's other examples in the article, and I'll leave it to you to read it for yourselves if you want to, if you are there, either subscribe to Wall Street Journal or you would like to read the article and pay your $12.50. I'm going to put the article link at my you know, show page at Spotify in the episode description, just like the article that I was discussing in last week's podcast that was, you know, based on an article from another publication called The Atlantic. So I will provide the link there. So just go to my Spotify show page and it will be there so you can click on it for yourself. So in this particular example, the dog came in for a stiff hip, right? And so we don't know if x-rays were ever taken to confirm that the hip was necessarily from osteoarthritis, because that's really the main indication of Librela is for osteoarthritic dogs. Osteoarthritis refers to the formation of bone calluses along cartilaginous surfaces, which cause incongruencies in the joints, inflammatory reactivity, and at the end of the day, pain and lack of mobility. So we don't know what kind of workup was done. It wasn't mentioned in the article. Perhaps the vet was basing what was going on physical examination and decided, you know, we have an older patient. It's reasonable to conclude that we have an arthritic hip. Let's try this. And if it doesn't work, you know, lots of times, you know, we're trying to save the client some cost because Librela ain't cheap, right? And if it works, we know, or we've hit the jackpot, and we'll continue. And we've saved the need to sedate your dog and, you know, take a series of hip x-rays. And, you know, I would probably do hip and knees if I was a veterinarian. But do we truly know what's going on based on physical examination? No, not necessarily. That hip could be stiff and painful for a lot of reasons. For example, the dog could have a thoracolumbar herniated disc that is radiating pain down that one leg. And we can often misdiagnose what we think is just arthritis, which is actually a bulging disc, one or more bulging discs in the back, somewhere between thoracic vertebra 3 and lumbar vertebra 3. We call it a T3 to L3 lesion. And so when I'm looking at this case, I'm thinking, okay, well, yeah, there's probably some arthritis in the hips and knees and all the joints of a 12-year-old dog, but at the same time, was the main driver of pain in that hip necessarily from arthritis? Well, here's my hypothesis. I'm looking at it this way. The hip may not have been that arthritic, no more than the other hip. We had a disproportionate herniation of disc affected that one hip, that one leg. You know, like we can radiate sciatic pain down our leg, and it could be one leg or the other. I get periodic sciatic pain, and it tends to affect my right way more than my left, so you can get disproportionate discomfort. And it feels, and I know from experience, if I don't take care of my back and stretch and make sure I'm doing my diligence to warm up properly, I've experienced what feels like hip pain. And literally, like, I'm thinking to myself, am I getting arthritis in my hip? No, I'm not. I'm experiencing radiating pain from a nerve. So the pain's coming from further up the pike, but boy, does it feel like it's right in my hip. And so the same thing happens with dogs. So my hypothesis for this dog is that it had a bulging disc. Librela was given. despite the labrella, things got worse. The wobbliness of now both back legs was probably the result of what we would call upper motor neuron signs, because probably the disc bulged further, got worse, maybe an additional adjacent disc or discs bulged as well, and things got worse, as intervertebral disc disease of the spine commonly does, despite our best efforts. However, the conclusion from these owners, and they're very convinced that, oh boy, it was labrella, and nobody's going to tell us any differently. And I'm just waiting for a Labrella Kills Dogs Facebook page to start any day now. And I don't want to disparage these owners. I mean, they tragically lost their dog, and I certainly, you know, don't want to speak poorly of them just because, you know, they feel strongly that this is what occurred. But I also believe that, you know, just because you're hurting and grieving and you want a reason and you want closure, jumping to conclusions that are just not currently accurate, and there is no basis for jumping to those conclusions, scientifically, research, whatever, clinical experience, you know, that's a disservice, in my opinion, to so many dogs out there that can so well benefit from Labrella. I have many patients on it, and it's so incredible, because it's the modality of it is, and I'm not going to get into the too much in the weeds about how it works. Basically, it's a monoclonal antibody that targets nerve growth factor, which is the main driver of pain within the joints. And so basically, it's programming the immune system to remove this stuff. And you see dogs are literally crippled and are walking like, you know, they could really use maybe a wheelchair at this point, and just so lame that it, you know, and anti-inflammatories are not helping the dog at this point, and adding gabapentin and even opiates like tramadol are not helping, and in comes Labrella, and it's like, whoa. Like, usually I see the most improvement at injection 3, but very often after injection 1, boy, it's working really well. I've never seen it lead to wobbliness in the back end. I have never seen it lead to paralysis of the back end. It's not a side effect that is listed anywhere in the clinical studies. Let's talk about the side effects then. So let's just say side effects are quite rare. I believe they are less than 1% of cases. And there's three things that were the most common. And when I say the most common, in the clinical studies and in hindsight data, it's not that common. Less than 1% of dogs experience these things. One was urinary tract infections. One was bacterial infections or rashes. And one was dermatitis, which to me, probably dermatitis is a blanket term. I think we could probably put that in the bacterial skin infection and rash bucket. And so you look at those three side effects, and yeah, if I see one of these three after a Labrella injection, I might want to discontinue treatment. But I've not even seen one of these yet, and I probably at this point have greater than 50 patients that are on it on a monthly basis. And so when you look at some of the other things that people are reporting and they're blaming it on Labrella, again, it doesn't fall into what the data is telling us. So rest assured that, you know, we need to do our diligence and document these cases and make sure that we don't see the more of them. And maybe there is a correlation, but at the same time, extensive research has been done, and these things being reported by these certain owners are just not something that's seen in the research and the clinical data. I'm a big follow the science guy. You know, you got to look at the numbers, statistics, incidents, all that. Follow the scientific method. And I'm looking at my own clinical experience. I've not seen any of these things being reported in greater than 50 patients of mine that are on it for the past year. So I got a nice hindsight data of my own. And, you know, rest assured, if your dog is a patient of mine and he's on Labrella and we see some kind of cause and effect where we give an injection and something happens, I'm going to be on the phone with Zoetis, the company that makes the product, immediately and say, hey, have you gotten any reports of this? They have veterinarians on staff that are, you know, they jump on the phone in a hot second, to discuss these incidents. They have a whole department set up for reports. And what they do is they document that report. They set up a case number for it, for follow-up if we need follow-up. And they also will document the incident in terms of, okay, this was seen after an injection. How does this correlate? Is this something that is a pattern? And then if they see a pattern, they report the pattern, and that gets listed in the side effects. And I believe that's an FDA requirement as well. So as far as that is concerned, back to Lawrence's original concern, whose dog is doing awesome on Librela, I would feel safe with Librela. I would not hesitate to use it in one of my dogs. I'm not going to use it until I have to, but at the same time, I'm not going to wait till my dog is crippled. I have a big yellow lab. He's 76 pounds. He's a big boy. You know, their joints don't age as well as smaller dogs. And right now, I just have him precautionarily on Hill's JD, which is a joint health nutrition diet prescription level. Not because he's arthritic, but I want to save that off as long as possible. He's going to be 6 years old in August, and you know, he's well into middle age, and he'll be a senior by the time he's eight. So I'm being proactive. But the second I see a hint of arthritis, guess what? Nacho is going on Librela, and I'm going to have no reservations about doing it unless, you know, something comes up, something that's dramatic. And we're just not seeing that right now. And by the way, if something does dramatic come to light, I'll be the first person to jump on the air and tell you about it. So stay subscribed. You know, I'm here to give you the truth. You know, the unvarnished truth, not just based on all of the diligence that I do and what I'm going to put into my patients, but number two, my own clinical experience. I've been doing this a very long time. I'm 21 years and, oh my God, 22 years into practice. Holy moly, free holy. How did that happen? I'm 22 years into practice. So I've been to the puppet show and seen all the strings, and I certainly don't dismiss or discount anything. So long story short, or short story long, I should say, I am perfectly comfortable with Librela. Nothing is without potential side effects. I just told you about the side effects. Please shout it from the rooftops. Feel free to do your diligence and read that Wall Street Journal article for yourself to help yourself be as informed as possible. And that link, as I said, will be at my show page description at my Spotify show page. One of the things I would advise before I let you go is please follow me at Spotify. There's a lot of cool functionality there. That is where my description is. I'm syndicated all over the place. You could be listening to me through Apple Podcasts. I mean, I Googled Space Coast Pet Podcast a couple days ago. I couldn't believe how syndicated I am. I would say at least 30 that I counted podcast platforms that are syndicating the RSS feed for my podcast. So it updates from all those places as well. And if you like those places and you're happy there, certainly continue to listen from there. But I feel like you get potentially more out of functionalities like when I do listener polls or other various things that I want to start doing to get, you know, more traction in listener engagement. So again, I would encourage you to follow me there. So just Google Space Coast Pet Podcast Spotify, and you can follow me right there. It's for free. It doesn't cost anything. So not like the Wall Street Journal that's $12.50 a week. I come to you for nothing because I really enjoy it. So anyway, that's my show for today. Thank you so much for caring about what I have to say. Lawrence, thank you for your pithy email. It was fantastic. You successfully inspired an entire episode, and I thank you for that. Have a great rest of your day, everyone, until we meet again.